Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
It's kind of our little peek every fortnight into the future and what it may well bring. And if you've been following this segment for the last few months, you'll know that it seems like almost nothing is going to be untouched by change. Now, we all know that, but some of the changes that Richard Watson, futurist, is suggesting are certainly things that can either keep you up at night or certainly get you talking around the water cooler on Monday morning. Richard, good to talk to you again.
Hi, Sheridan.
Let's talk about food and drink. You're saying that even this is a place where we might see a monumental change. Food riots, robotic insects, all sorts of things. Now, let's talk about some trends first. We had the slow food movement that started a few years ago as obviously a reaction against fast food. Are we seeing the trend accelerate, but that probably isn't the right adjective, but is it continuing on?
I think it will intensify. I mean, as you say, this is a perfect example, if you like, of a counter-trend or a cycle, in that we had fast food and very fast cities. We now have slow food and slow cities, and the idea is that we should grow, cook and eat things a bit more slowly and sort of celebrate where they're from and that sort of thing. I think it is becoming more and more important, although this will, funnily enough, I think will depend on the economy. If the economy was to crash, I don't think anyone is really that interested in slow food or organics. They have sort of other things to worry about. But if everything sort of goes back to sort of what I vaguely call normal, and we have a bit of money in our pocket, then I think we'll start worrying more about, you know, how things are grown, how we eat them, and so on and so forth.
I saw a preview of a documentary movie called Food Inc. Have you had a chance to see that?
Is it No, I'm aware of that, but I haven't actually seen that.
Yeah, and it's a whole documentary about how food is produced in the United States, how it's only, you know, a handful of very, very huge multinational corporations that run it, and all of the evil, so to speak, that goes on as a result of that. I think anybody who watches those kinds of films will probably be running to the slow food movement as well.
Absolutely.
Yes. Another trend that you seem to be watching here is traceability. Are we starting to think more about where our food is coming from?
Yes, I mean, this connects quite intimately to the whole slow food idea. I think we want, we're somewhat cynical around big business and government and even scientists these days, and we want to know the sort of the backstory or the narrative. Where is it from? How was it made? When was it made? Where was it made? I mean, it's almost like, you know, the information you get on the average bottle of wine, we want on our fillet of chicken, we want on our packet of nuts, and it's even going outside food now. I think we want to know it about our car or our iPod or something like that. And it's partly because we have a sort of genuine interest in the story of things. It's partly, I say, there's a sort of cynicism around things. And it's also linked into the sort of quest for authenticity and realness and so on.
I guess some would actually say, well, that's a good thing, because with climate change and, you know, reducing the amount of oil that is used to transfer something from somewhere around the world over to our, you know, dinner tables in Australia, that's probably a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it links to the whole sort of rise of localism as a sort of backlash against globalism. So we're trying to sort of eat locally and so on and so forth. The other thing internationally it connects to quite strongly, although not so much here, is if you look at places like Japan, certainly, to some extent Germany, to some extent the UK, there have been enormous problems with food. I mean, you know, people have died from tainted food, and they've had all sorts of sort of scares around things that ranging from sort of meat through to baby food and all the rest of it. And it's linked into this sort of trust thing, is that, you know, who's the maker of this, and can I actually trust where it's come from? And Australia is doing this in the other direction. And we talk about from sort of paddock to plate, and you can actually trace where a piece of meat has come from. If you're sitting, you know, if you're sitting eating some Australian meat in Japan, you can actually get quite a lot of information about where it's come from and, yes, you know, how it was reared and so on.
Yes. And are we becoming more indulgent or a little bit more kind of conservative and thoughtful, smaller portions, etc., when it comes
to
food?
Well, it's kind of both, actually. I mean, first of all, we've got a trend towards sort of low cost and convenience food, and secondly, there's the absolute opposite trend, which is towards sort of premiumization and slowing things down quite a bit. And again, I do think this is linked to the economy in quite a significant way. What I think is really interesting with relation to indulgence is the rise of comfort eating. I think, you know, everything's changing too much for us. There's quite a sort of level of anxiety there. So there's a sort of nostalgic element to a lot of our eating. We want to go back to the sort of foods of our childhood, and we want to sort of eat sort of warm, comfy food, if you like. Linked into this is also the whole sort of premiumization trend, where we're sort of, you know, getting more luxurious foods, and it's quite indulgent, and we want to sort of treat ourselves because we feel we need it. It's a bit like that old L'Oreal line, because I'm worth it. Well, I think works in sort of food terms as well. There's also a sort of weird polarization between health and indulgence. I mean, I did some work once years ago, like 15 years ago, with an airline, and there was some fabulous research And when people get on the airplane, it's a bit like mentally they go left or right. You're either in that sort of my body is a temple well-being mode where you do your exercises and you eat salad and lettuce and boiled chicken and drink water, or you're like a kid in the sweet shop. You stick on the movies, you drink too much, and you have the chocolate pudding and the really rich, you know, main course. And the two don't seem to connect very much. It's quite weird.
There we are, two trends at once. This is Open House. We're talking about the future of food with futurist Richard Watson. You always are throwing some predictions as well. So let me give you the phrase you can unpack it. 10-mile diets. What are those?
Well, we've already got, they're not very common, we've already got 100-mile diets where people are refusing to eat anything that was produced more than 100 miles away. So effectively, I've just taken that trend and extended it and turned the volume up on it and just made it even more local.
Wow.
I think maybe 10's going a bit far. I should probably put 50, but you know, I think it's going to go in that direction.
Obviously, you're writing for the US market too, using the word mile.
Yes, exactly. Well, it shows how old I am.
Also, food riots? Really?
Yeah, well, we had them not so long ago.
In Haiti,
well, I can't remember exactly how long, 2 or 3 years ago. I think food has become too cheap. I mean, we think of the cost that food is now as quite normal. It, historically, it's incredibly cheap. And this, to some extent, I think that and convenience and accessibility links to obesity. Now, I think the raw materials, if you like, are going to get a whole lot more expensive in the future. Oil is the key one. Water is another key one. So I think the cost of your average steak, but also the average loaf of bread and pint of milk, is going to start going skyward quite quickly. And in certain countries, that does actually cause riots. I mean, there's the great phrase, I think, we're only 2 or 3 meals or 4 meals away from a revolution.
Yes.
I think that's still true. If people don't have food in their stomachs 2 or 3 days running or can't afford to eat, they get on the streets. They get angry.
Yes, well, of course, we saw something like that happen in Haiti before the earthquake. And yes, you do see that in countries around the world where, yes, desperate people do desperate things. That makes sense. You're talking about there just the fact that food is too cheap. This Food Inc. documentary that I went to see made a very big case for that it's actually cheaper to buy fast food than it is to buy fruit and vegetables. And it's because of, well, the various monetary interests involved in actually getting us all eating that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
would be interesting to see where that goes in the future. Now, robotic insects for crop pollination.
Oh, this is just a bit of fun. Yeah, I've seen spy planes in the US in laboratories the size of a large wasp that have cameras on board and can fly around like a little radio-controlled aeroplane. So, and I've also heard sort of discussion about this idea, which is, you know, why cannot, with sort of our knowledge of robotics and even nanotechnology and things, why can't we make these incredibly small robots the size of a fly or a fruit fly that can just buzz around pollinating our crops? I mean, the pollination of crops is extremely important, obviously, and we've had these sort of scares about the lack of bees and all the rest of it. So maybe we will invent synthetic bees in the future to go around pollinating things.
I can just imagine the day where the batteries die in the remote control and off the little horde of bees go and take over the world.
Absolutely. I suppose in the Australian context, they would have to be sort of robotic flies, and we'd refer to them as bloody flies, and, you know, when they went in the wrong direction or something like that.
Imagine swatting one. You'd be $500,000 down the
exactly.
down the tube. Always good to talk to you, Richard.
Thanks very much indeed.
Future trends expert Richard Watson there.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.